24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It is Friday, December 16th, and we have a fantastic show for you today and a bunch of great shows lined up for the rest of the year. On Tuesday next week, the 20th, we have the founder of Waze, that app, the traffic app we all use. He is a double unicorn founder. We're going to have all fresh shows next week, except for Friday. On Friday, the 23rd, we are not. On the following week, the week after Christmas, we have two incredible shows lined up for you. We're going to meet the founder of Digistore 24, which is one of the largest back-end platforms for consumer websites. And we're going to talk about security camera AI, all of that right before the new year. And then our first show of the year will be January 3rd, Tuesday. And our guest will be Deepak Ohri, who is the number one hotel. Let me see how to rephrase this. His hotels are ranked number one chain in the world. And so it's an amazing story. Started off poor Indian, and now he's the owner of one of the most luxurious hotel chains in the world. Today's show, Jeff Miller is up first with a year-end checklist. We're then going to talk about talk with Tony Restel about his company, Social Hire. And then we're going to talk about counterfeit and how to prevent counterfeits and how to spot them, how to not buy them, all of that with Kathy Vidal and Paul Del Ponte. So great show today, great stuff coming up. And of course, we wish you happy, happy holidays. And most importantly, are you getting stuff done on your to-do list and getting things knocked out? All right, let's get started with the great show. I'm very excited to be joined now by one of the top wealth advisors in the country. And I'll explain that in just a second. Please welcome to the show, Jeff Miller. He is with Northwestern Mutual, where he has been one of the top 15 of 6,500 since 2007. Think about that. That's like 15 years of being, it's like winning 12 Super Bowls in a row. Anyway, Jeff is here today to talk about end of year planning, getting ready for all of the things we're going to encounter as we move into 23. Jeff, welcome. How you doing?
Jim, good morning, sir, and happy holidays. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you. All right, what are you expecting to happen here as we wrap up the year? Are we going to have a good end of the year, bad end of the year? Are we taking it in with momentum into 23, or are we looking like we're about to run out of gas?
Well, you know, I don't think we're going to run out of gas. And, you know, for those that wonder if this is something like 2008, I don't think it is, because the financial system itself is very stable. That said, there are always geopolitical risks. And in fact, the Fed meets today and tomorrow. So we're going to learn a lot as we, you know, near the end of the year. That said, I think there are opportunities for everyone. And, you know, in fact, just making a year-end financial checklist, reviewing what you did in 2022, determining how did you come in relative to your early year expectations, and hoping everyone sets a positive start toward 2023.
All right, so let's go through some of those in detail. What do I need to look at from 22 before I even start thinking about 23? So how do I wrap up this year?
Well, you know, when you think about it, Jim, not everyone has financial goals, but if we reflect on every public company and the sharpest and finest minds running them, along with private companies, generally speaking, all of them have goals. They had a baseline set of assumptions. They might have done some sensitivity analysis to determine, you know, how might things fall out? Because let's face it, The world is not linear, nor is life. So I think the best place to start is to just check in and see how you did, and whether you had goals or not, you have that opportunity. If you set goals at the beginning of the year, it's great to benchmark and to compare. And by the way, hopefully you did some of that throughout your year. But at a very minimum, you can check to determine how you did financially and in life generally. And if nothing more, it's a great opportunity to just start off 2023 in the right direction. In other words, set yourself the very best opportunity for success financially going forward.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. In terms of year-end planning, are there any changes to the law that we need to pay attention to this year, or is there anything like that that's out there?
Well, there are many things that have happened. In fact, you know, it's funny. Rarely are we able to say that we're experiencing, quote, inflation in the right direction. But there are some fairly dramatic increases to things like the standard deduction. So when filing your taxes, the standard deduction for a married couple filing jointly went from $25,900 to $27,700, so an $1,800 increase. There are increases in the annual gift tax exclusion from $16,000 to $17,000, and a fairly massive increase in the applicable exclusion having to do with estate tax. So yeah, there are numerous things that have changed. And then, frankly, some things that have stayed the same, just like year-end general tax planning opportunities that apply to probably your entire demographic, to your youngest listeners, to your business owners, and even to the very most financially sophisticated listeners.
All right. And what are the things I want to do moving forward? So how do I make a, let's assume that we don't have good practices now, and we need to start making a checklist, and maybe we don't even know what that word means. So when you say financial checklist, I mean, what am I checking off here? Did I pay my bills on time? What's, I don't know. Help me, assuming I'm not even ready for that.
Right. It's a fair question. Well, I'm going to make the assumption everyone's paying their bills on time. And if they're not, then I agree with you, Jim. That's a good place to start. But moving on from there, I think I would say, you know, set the stage for giving yourself simply the opportunity to save as much as possible. Now, I like to joke sometimes with people and I say, you know, would you be willing to save someone else's money? And needless to say, everyone's going to say, sure, I'm happy to do that. Well, if you think about it, if your business is more profitable next year than this, if you're an employee and you receive an increase, I wonder if on your checklist right now, you might not be able to commit to saving as much of that future increase in income as possible. I realize it's really your income, but when you think about it, it's not your income today. And so to me, it's a great place to start. For those that aren't saving enough, try to plan to save as much as you can going forward. What about things like, you know, maxing out your 401k or IRA, or maybe even both of those things? Those are great opportunities to save money with pre-tax dollars. And in doing so, today it costs you less than $1 to save a full dollar. And in some cases, you'll receive a match on those 401k dollars. There are other opportunities, by the way, for things like Roth IRA conversion. And some taxpayers don't realize, because their income may be too high to qualify for funding a Roth. But all taxpayers at all income levels have the ability to convert IRA money to Roth. It doesn't mean it's always the right thing to do, but let's face it, equity markets are down at least a little bit for most people this year, and there may be opportunities there. I think there are lots of other things folks can do. Charitable contributions is a great example, right? It makes you feel good. It's good for the heart. And by the way, it's also a tax deduction. So some folks will give cash, but folks with appreciated property also have the opportunity to give away appreciated property. And in fact, the charity benefits just as well, but that taxpayer can take the cash they would have given directly to the charity, buy back the security that was appreciated, and effectively step up their cost basis. So everyone other than Uncle Sam wins. For the business owner, there are all sorts of things that can be done. I think it's smart to just review year-end employee benefits. Maybe review your portfolio's asset allocation, along with your time horizon and your risk level and performance for that matter. And what about things like your operating agreement or your buy-sell agreement? You know, Jim, it's remarkable how many very financially astute business owners have old legal documents, and they're so darn good at doing what they do, they often don't have the time, or maybe they just don't take the time to slow down and focus on some of these things. So I think there are truly just a multitude of opportunities to put on the checklist, from the simplest of things like start saving or save more, up to updating your wills and revocable living trusts and other more advanced estate planning techniques.
You know, Jeff, most of our listeners are business owners, and so we are in a very particular bucket. If we think that this upcoming year is going to be a challenging year for our particular business, what's the most important thing to do, to continue to save or to pay bills that really hurt to pay? You know, we might not be able to pay every bill right now. Do we still save or do we pay every bill? This one can wait a while. I know it. I know it can. What are your thoughts for us owners?
You know, I think people will vary in their opinion on this, but I am always much more in the camp of paying your bills, stockpiling your cash, and setting the stage or planning in advance for something that, you know, forthcoming may be less attractive. So let's face it, saving is great, but if you save money and then 6 months from now need to uninvest what you previously invested, you didn't really get anywhere. And in fact, maybe, Jim, you subjected yourself to some market risk or some credit risk or what have you that you just didn't want to. So no, listen, for the business owners that are anticipating something a little more challenging, I think the smart answer is to block and tackle, right? Stockpile some cash if you have the ability. Prioritize the bills that need to be paid. But moreover, and probably paramount to all of that, is, again, rebuild your financial plan. You know, update the strategic plan for your business. Determine the opportunities for, you know, cutting costs and for expanding opportunities. So I think your point is well taken. You know, for the folks that are more focused on 2023, I don't think saving for the long term is the priority. But again, to the degree that we all can agree that life's not linear, I think what that emphasizes is come into each year with ample cash to try to circumvent the bumpiness of what might be forthcoming. And in those good years where you've got excess cash, let's be really smart with what you do with it, right? Let's use that as an opportunity to circumvent or mitigate the future speed bumps that today maybe we can't anticipate.
Jeff, real fast, Tampa looking good or a bad year for the Bay Area?
I think Tampa looks great, and I think Florida looks great. And in the most nonpartisan way, I literally know how to say this. I think what we find is the Nevadas and Texas and Floridas of the world are prospering purely from a demographic perspective, if nothing more. So as we find an influx of people, while I realize that can lead to volatility over time, I think not only Florida generally, but the Tampa St. Pete area is probably as well poised as any city in America I can think of, and I'm proud to live here.
How do we find out more, follow you online, keep in touch?
Well, my name is Jeff Miller. As you said, I've been with Northwestern Mutual for 35 years. I do business as Miller Financial Services, and you can find me at MFS, that's Miller Financial Services, .NM, that's NorthwesternMutual.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us. Great stuff, Jeff, and hope you have a great 23.
Thank you, sir. I'm planning on it, and it's part of my goals. Hope you do as well. Cheers.
Bye-bye-bye. And we will be right back. And we are still here and very appreciative that you are as well. I'm excited now to welcome to the show Tony Restel. He is the head guy behind a company called Social Hire. It's a UK-based firm doing social media marketing. They love to turn social media into leads and sales within 90 days. They've helped thousands of clients grow, and they claim that they can do it for one-third the cost of hiring an in-house person. The business has worked with some amazing clients, just like his other businesses. Tony worked with a company and started and sold a company called Top Consultant, which worked with Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Coca-Cola, and that was sold to the Daily Mail Group. Pretty impressive. He does lots of speaking across the continent and likes to speak with MBA students. Tony, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on today.
All right. Why does social media fail so frequently? So much social media does so little. Why?
Very good question. I think we're all fooled by our homepages where we see, you know, these posts that have huge amounts of engagement on and people are getting hundreds of comments and hundreds of likes. And we think, well, you know, if we could just replicate that for ourselves, so many people would see us and what we do that, you know, the phone would just not stop ringing from the amount of interest that we create. But that's actually a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of social media users ever actually achieve, you know, that level of celebrity status, if we can call it that. So I think a lot of social media fails because people are chasing business wins through being, you know, famous and hugely visible. And that's actually not, you know, the most effective route to success.
All right. Boy, that sets me up for an easy question. What is?
Absolutely. I mean, we really focus on you only need a small number of your ideal clients that you know you have won over, befriended, built their trust, and ultimately get to have, you know, meetings or calls with. You know, for most small businesses, that's all they need to be hugely successful on social media. And you don't need to be a big celebrity on social media to achieve that. You know, if you take a typical business owner or someone in a sales role and, you know, they're working in a tech company or they're working in a consulting firm, you know, they don't need to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of meetings each year to be successful. They just need to build relationships with, you know, a small number of the right people. And then it becomes a numbers game. You know, if you're getting enough meetings each year with the right people, and you know how much you typically, you know, turn those meetings into actual sales, you can get a heck of a lot of results on social media without necessarily being, you know, anyone that other people would look at as any kind of, you know, social media superstar.
Right. I love that formula. If you say, I want to make $100,000, let's go backwards. If I want $100,000, then I need 50 clients. If I need 50 clients, I need to get in front of 200 people because I close one out of four. If I want to get in front of 200 people, I need to have the phone ring 800 times, that sort of thing, right? That's what you're talking about.
Exactly. And very early in my life, Jim, during my college years, I spent my summers in the US doing door-to-door selling, selling school books door-to-door. And, you know, I learned so much about sales, but also the importance of numbers and conversion rates and everything from that experience. But yeah, it was a fascinating time. It was a funny story from that, actually. We used to compete with the US students. So there'll be a whole batch of US students doing the same job, and then us Brits flying over from the UK. And the US students would always say, oh, you Brits have it so easy. You know, you just get your, you get to go into the houses. Everyone wants to talk to you guys. You know, as soon as you knock on the door, people hear you're a Brit. They want to invite you in and talk to you. For us, it's so hard. No one will let us in. You know, it's much harder for US students. And we would turn around and say, yeah, but everyone lets us in to talk to us, and most of them aren't interested in what we're selling. So then we lose a whole ton of time on talking to people who weren't interested. Whereas for you, if someone lets you in, you know, you really are interested. So I just sort of share that as an anecdote. But my business today is in large part built around, you know, things that I learned from that experience, and also just seeing how most people don't like selling and most people aren't that good at selling. And so if you can do things with social media that just pull up the results of, you know, a regular person in a business rather than your sales superstar, then, you know, across a business, that can have a massive, massive effect.
Well said. I love those summer sales programs. I don't know which one. I thought you were with Cutco for a second, the knife company, but you said sales books. Were you selling encyclopedias?
It's a company called Southwestern. I believe they're still very active today. In my day, they were selling sort of revision guides. So when you were studying for your exams in the States, then they sold guides to help students with that. But yeah, you know, learned the hard way, everything about sales through that experience.
Oh, I love those experiences. All right. So when a client comes on, what are you advising them to do differently? What is the success formula look like? I only need a small number of customers, you say, or a small number of engagements. So what are we going to do now with my social to make it work better?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, we actually help clients come up with a strategy that's right for their business. And then it's our team that actually do the social media for them day to day. So you have some companies that will come in and, you know, train a business on what to do and then leave them to get on and do it. Whereas we're very much coming in and actually taking over that function for a company. And hence, you know, a third of the cost of employing a social media manager. That is the alternative that a lot of these companies have, is they would go out and, you know, employ a social media manager or turn to a business like ours. But to answer your question about, you know, how are we going to improve things, we really focus on three things, and it's what I would recommend any small business focuses on. If you want to get a whole load of outcomes from social media, whatever it is you're trying to drive, you know, event attendees or sales calls or whatever it might be, focus on three things. The first of those is how you're going to grow your social media following with your ideal clients. So what are you going to do week in, week out that's going to mean more of your ideal customers are now fans, followers, connections of your business or of the individuals in your business? So that's the first thing you've got to do, is focus down on how you're going to achieve that.
All right, walk me through that. How do we make the numbers go up?
Well, I mean, it obviously varies by platform, but, you know, if you take LinkedIn as a simple example that, you know, probably most people listening will be familiar with, you know, that platform opened up 3 or 4 years ago when they launched a new version of the site. And you may know, or lots of your listeners will remember, you used to have to say when you were connecting to someone on LinkedIn how you knew them. And, you know, you were encouraged. You had to say, oh, you know, I went to college with them, or I used to work with them at this company. And so the idea was you were only networking on LinkedIn with a very small number of people. Whereas when the site relaunched several years ago, they got rid of that requirement and they opened up the platform and said, everyone can connect with 30,000 people. So there's no longer any, you know, any pretense there that it's only a platform for networking with people you've worked with very closely. So, you know, as a simple example, you know, if you are, let's say you're a consulting firm and you advise people in the online retail space. Okay, well, how many decision makers are there in online retail focusing businesses in the countries that you serve? Probably hundreds or maybe even thousands. So if you make it your mission that over the next few months you're going to get connected with as many of those people as possible, you take yourself from a situation where you're barely visible to those decision makers on social media to a situation where you've now saturated that audience. You're not a super celebrity. You're not someone whose posts are getting, 2,000 comments, but you are being seen by the smaller number of people who, are most likely to buy from your business. So that would be one example, but, for other businesses might be growing a Facebook group.
What about growing Instagram in particular?
Could also be that. We focus ourselves, Jim, on small B2B businesses. So very often
care about
then,
Instagram.
They're not as suited to Instagram as businesses.
Right.
But the same principles would apply if you had a business where your audience would hang out on Instagram. Then clearly, if you've got a lot more of your target clients, following you there, then, you stand to win a lot more business from that.
All right. Number two, the three things we did. Number one, what's number two?
Well, the second thing is you've got to build trust. I mean, anyone in sales will tell you that people buy from people they know, like, and trust. So if you've got a new Instagram follower or you've got a new LinkedIn connection and they know nothing about you, how are you going to take them from that position to a position where they really view you as an expert in whatever it is you do? And by posting valuable insights, doing it consistently, but also doing it in the ways that that platform rewards, over a period of a few weeks from when you've connected or when you've got that follower, you can build yourself up to the point where, okay, they've now seen you lots of times talking about whatever it is you specialize in, and they come to view you more and more as someone who is an expert in your field. Even better if you've interacted with them during that time and perhaps had some, some comments back and forth on some of the posts. Just building trust, building credibility, and that comes down to consistency of posting. It comes down to adding value with what you post. And it comes down to knowing how that particular site works. I mean, there's things you can do on LinkedIn at the moment that get huge visibility. There are other things you can do on LinkedIn where you get almost no visibility whatsoever. So obviously, each platform you want to be visible on, you need to understand how that platform works and track how it's changing as well and adapt to those changes.
What's the thing that's going to get me huge visibility on LinkedIn?
So right now, polls are hugely rewarded on LinkedIn. So I did an experiment actually a couple of weeks ago and did a week of posting just polls. And every one of those seven polls over that week had greater visibility than anything else I'd posted in the preceding month. Figure out a way to use polls, not in a way that's, spammy or low value, but in a way that is going to collect insights that your ideal customers would really value seeing. And then they want to take part in the polls. They view you as valuable because you're the person who's unearthed that insight for them. So, for example, a lot of our clients are recruitment businesses. So, a recruitment client might put out a poll to see who is still actively recruiting at the moment, who's got hiring freezes on, and so on and so forth. And from that, you're then able to collect real-time data that says, okay, there's a lot of scary talk in the press at the moment about, what's happening with the economy. But actually, we can see that in our sector, most companies are still recruiting pretty aggressively. So that, for example, is a really interesting data point for anyone who's in that industry to know. And you've been able to facilitate that by being the person who's got the right connections in that market and who's put out that poll and surfaced that data.
So I'm just sitting here thinking what I could do for entrepreneurs. I could do something like, do you believe, yes or no, that venture capitalists truly are embodied by the devil? Yes or no?
Anything that's contentious tends to do well. Obviously, with anything contentious, you have to take a view on whether you want your business associated with that or not. Anything that's emotional, personal, contentious will get a high response rate. Having said that, you could put out a poll that is, are iPhones better than Androids, or do you prefer cats or dogs? And those polls would get lots of response and lots of visibility, but is that really the visibility
world
that your business
wants? I
want
entrepreneurs to look at the polls, not
exactly.
You know, cat
exactly.
Lovers.
Exactly. Nothing so it's really important what you choose.
We're a mixed house, Tony. We have two cats, two dogs, two boys, two girls, two old kids, two young kids, zero small, smart parents. Anyway. All right, number three. We're ready for number three.
Yeah, so, I mean, if all you do is one and two, then what you've basically done is increased your brand awareness in the market. You know, more of the people you would want to buy from you know your company or know you personally and have a better understanding of your expertise and what it is you do. But if you're sitting back waiting for, you know, the phone to be ringing endlessly just from that visibility, you're going to be waiting an awful long time. So the third thing is figuring out, okay, having built this audience and having built trust with that audience, how am I going to convert that audience into business results for us? And yeah, there's a whole variety of different ways you could do that, but you're basically saying, okay, how can we take, for example, all these LinkedIn connections we've built and turn that into a whole load of call bookings that we've got over the coming weeks with our ideal clients? And that brings me back to what I said about the early days of, you know, learning to sell door to door. That was all about improving things marginally, you know, looking at your numbers, figuring out what's working, what's not working so well, and then trying different things to see what would improve your results. And it's the same with figuring out conversion. You know, try a couple of different approaches, see which one's working better for you, then, you know, double down on whatever's working, and then experiment with that some more and see if you can improve on you know, what's been your best approach to date. But I'll give you an illustration there, you know, so that people listening can get a feel for how this would work. One of the industries we do a lot of work with is the management consulting industry, obviously with my background in that sector. And in the consulting industry, firms love to have amazing thought leadership reports. They love to publish things where, you know, everyone in the market is going to view them as the absolute experts on this topic. And then they try and market that and get it seen as much as possible and hope that that brings in leads for them. Well, we turn that on its head with consulting firms and we say, why don't you use the fact that you're going to produce this piece of thought leadership as a brilliant reason to be having loads of calls with your ideal clients to talk about the kinds of challenges that your business could help with. So, for example, yeah, there's huge supply chain challenges in the world at the moment with COVID, with the war, and everything that's followed on from that. Loads of different industries that are struggling to get, you know, enough of the parts and so on that they need to be able to produce what they produce on time and to the volume that they need to. So imagine now that you're a supply chain consultancy and you've built up an audience of supply chain directors all around the world with the biggest clients you could possibly want to win. And now you get in touch with them through social media and say, look, we're looking to produce this authoritative report on the current challenges that supply chain directors are facing. We'd love to grab a bit of time on the phone with you and get your insights and tap into, you know, what you've been experiencing in the market. Any chance we could grab some time on the phone this coming week? Now, if you send that out to a whole load of the right people that you've built up rapport with over the preceding weeks, you will get typically 10% of people you ask to have a call will say yes. And that's for the first time of asking. So if you spent a few months building up that network and then you've taken a conversion approach like that, you've then immediately turned that social media presence into a whole series of calls with your ideal clients talking about the exact types of challenges that your consulting firm helps them to address.
Right. I like that. Yep.
And there's loads of other examples of that, but what's really important, because we can't help everyone who's listening to this call, What's really important is whoever you're going to work with to get results from social media, you really want to identify someone who's got a track record and experience in a business like yours. So if you can, you know, get someone on board either as an employee or an external agency like ours, and they've worked with businesses like yours before, then they can say to you, right, we're going to get you your first results in the first, you know, 2 months, 3 months of starting work together. Hence why we say, you know, you'll start getting ROI within 90 days of working with us. But if you don't have that expertise, then let's imagine that a pizza restaurant chain came to us, Jim, and said, could you do our social media for us and help us get, you know, more restaurant bookings in? Well, we could do a professional job for them. You know, their social media would look good. But from day one, I wouldn't know how we're going to get more customers in the doors of those pizza restaurants. I would have to then spend the following months testing, learning, testing, figuring out what works in that industry. And obviously, that's going to eat up money, it's going to eat up time. And so I would probably get results for a business like that in 12 months, once I've tried out loads of things and figured out what works. Whereas if you can find an expert to employ or an agency to bring in that have already worked with a business like yours lots of times before, then they will know a whole load of things that work, and therefore you'll be able to tap into those, you know, from day one of working together. So that would be, you know, a big piece of advice I'll give to everyone listening.
Tony, let's switch topics. Tell me about building the agency. How'd you decide to get started? Obviously, you were successful before that and maybe had a little money in the pocket, so maybe you're able to do some bootstrapping. How'd you get your first client? Talk to me about the birth of Social Hire.
Yeah, so my previous business was a job board in the consulting industry. And what we saw in that industry after I'd sold the business, I stayed on as an executive there for a number of years. Unfortunately, one of my kids got sick at that time. And so I'd wanted to launch a new business, but it was totally not the right time to do so. And the company were very supportive in keeping me on. But what I saw happening was all the consulting firms were moving away from advertising their jobs and switching to recruiting through LinkedIn instead. And so for me, that was really, you know, the wake-up call that this industry that I've spent the last 10 years serving is really changing here. And it's social media that is going to, you know, pick up the lion's share of this business going forwards. So it was literally seeing what was happening in my previous business that was the spur to me wanting to get into social media myself. And yeah, then I launched back in 2012. So, you know, been up and running 10 years now. Not many agencies in social media have been around as long as that. First clients, I was very fortunate because I had a huge network of recruitment business owners and management consultancy owners from that previous business. And so I was able to just reach out to, you know, my existing network of business owners who knew me, liked me, trusted me, and also had an interest in, you know, understanding what this new medium could do for their businesses. So it's not necessarily something that everyone else could replicate in terms of launching a new business, but that's how, you know, our initial client wins came about.
Right. Well, it's still useful to hear the story of how someone else did it. So,
Absolutely.
Great stuff. What's your lesson? Give us your favorite entrepreneurial lesson that you want the 18-year-old kid to know. Mine is, don't go get a collared, nice Izod polo shirt with your logo on it until you've already made some money. What's yours, Tony?
I've got two big bits of advice I would share from my experiences. One is try and get out into the market and sell whatever it is your business is going to do as quickly as you possibly can. We work with loads and loads of small startup businesses, and time again, you hear of how they've had to pivot in order to make their business a success. You know, they put a lot of effort into creating a business plan, researching the market, building, you know, the first version of their product or service, and gone out to market. And then, you know, in the first months of talking to potential clients, they uncovered a whole load of reasons why, you know, their current business model wouldn't necessarily work, but also uncovered a whole load of, you know, challenges and opportunities in the market that meant if they just change what they did a bit, then, you know, then they had a really good business model there to exploit. So I would encourage you to just get out and try and sell whatever it is you're planning on your business being as early as you can. There's such a tendency to invest many months into researching the market, perfecting the business plan. And to me, those are all just weeks that are being lost when you could have learned lessons that could have, well, saved your business and pointed it in the right direction. So that would be one big thing. The other big thing I would advise is build your business so it runs without you as the founder. That was absolutely critical when I sold my first business. Daily Mail newspaper group here in the UK, you know, one of the big things they were concerned with establishing when they were buying all these companies was, you know, is it going to operate just fine if you don't stick around? And obviously, if you built the whole business and all the functions within the business so that they're not reliant on the founder, then that's a much less risky proposition than buying a business where the founder is absolutely critical. But even if you don't have any intention of selling, you know, my current business, I'm very happy just running it. I'm not, you know, looking for an exit anytime soon. But it's much less stressful to have a business run where, you know, I know that had I got COVID for a couple of months and been wiped out, you know, the business would have carried on running fine. If anything happens in my life that means I need to take a period away from the business, I want to know that it can run and be successful, you know, without me being there every single day of the year. So those would be my two bits of advice.
Are you Team Harry or Team William?
I'm Team William, I have to say.
Me too.
But
not very impressed with that Harry guy anymore. Tony, great information. Congratulations on an incredible business. And you gave us tons of great takeaway. I took a whole bunch of notes. How do we find out more? Follow you online, all that stuff, please.
Yes, well, thank you. You can look up Social Hire. Just stick it in Google. It'll come up top. Or look me up on LinkedIn, Tony Restel. If you go to the site, you'll see that we have free discovery calls. So we're very happy to jump on a call with any, you know, anyone running a business who wants to figure out if this could work for their business. And we'll happily give you, you know, our steer on that. We really help business owners figure out if this is going to move the needle for them or not, Jim. I don't want to work with someone for just 3 months. I want to work with them for years and years. So unless we can see how that would work for them from the outset, you know, we're going to be very transparent that we don't think social media is right for your business. And there are businesses where that's the case. Or equally, we're going to say, we think your business needs an employee to do your social media, not an external agency. And again, there are examples of businesses where that's the case as well. So, but yeah, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, or head over to socialhire.com and book in for a call with us there.
Fantastic. Great stuff today. Thank you so much. And hope you'll come back again.
Really appreciate it. Loved talking to you, Jim. Thanks ever so much.
And we'll be right back. We are back. And again, thank you so very much for being with us. So we have, what, a week or so left of Christmas shopping time. And as always, it's so important that we don't get scammed and we pay attention to what we are buying. I'm very excited to welcome two guests who will help us do that, and maybe they will help us take a bite out of crime. Please welcome Kathy Vidal. She's Undersecretary of Commerce for IP and Director of the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and Paul Del Ponte. He is a nonprofit leader, award-winning consumer advocate, and was appointed to the National Crime Prevention Council to be their lead last year. Of course, you know them, and I already alluded to this. That is the home of McGruff the Crime Dog, and so we can all take a bite out of crime together. Kathy, Paul, welcome. How are you both doing?
Shedding light on this important issue, Jim.
It is my pleasure. So, counterfeits, this is an eBay issue and stuff I buy on the street corner?
It is an everywhere issue. It is online. It is on the street. It is sometimes even in stores. Consumers need to be very careful because the crooks and the criminals who are producing these fake products are getting more crafty, they're getting smarter. So consumers need to get smarter.
You know, I can understand buying something fake online, but how does it end up in a Bloomingdale's or not to pick on them, but you know, in any other department store, how does a big retail store end up with fake stuff?
So there's lots of ways that can happen. A lot of times those big retailers or whatever the store is, they've got to source their own goods. And as Paul said, these issues are becoming even bigger, and the crime syndicates are getting even smarter in terms of marketing not only to directly to consumers, but also to the stores themselves.
Well, if I go shopping at a store, I expect that it's going to be real. Gosh, that's scary. Is this a China problem, or is there other countries that are also counterfeit havens?
So there's a number of countries, but most of these products are coming in from overseas. We catch about $9 million in counterfeit product coming across our border every day. And I will say, Jim, when you talk about, you know, buying in the big stores, you're more likely not to see counterfeit goods there. Most of those
right.
counterfeit goods are sold online.
Okay. What are some of the things I can do to fight back? How do I take a bite out of crime?
Well, we're glad you asked that, because you can always take a bite out of crime by being smarter. Look at the products very carefully. Make sure they look and they feel authentic. If a piece of clothing or leather goods, many other things can be faked, but a lot of times if you're familiar with those products, you can touch and feel them, smell them, use all your senses. If you're buying online, be very careful when you're looking at the website. Make sure the URL of the website is spelled correctly. Somebody could be trying to fake Amazon and it's spelled with two A's or something. You know, there are many tricks that they'll try to use that a consumer who's unaware and unsuspecting will miss them. But if you are aware, you'll spot them.
Right. What happens if I end up with something that I suspect is counterfeit? What should I do then? Am I just SOL?
If you've already bought it, you should do a couple things. One, you should try to return it, contact whatever website you purchased it from and say you think it was fake. Some of the very reputable companies like Amazon have a very good policy about not questioning whether or not it is fake, and will assume that the consumer is right and will return it and get your money back. Contact your credit card company and contact local law enforcement. While there may not be anything they could do immediately to help you, you could have been victim of a bigger scam that they could be investigating, and by you calling them, you're giving them useful information to really stop the criminals.
Okay. Is this mostly textile products, clothing, purses, just, you know, that category of stuff?
It's everything. When it comes to products you're buying for the holidays, it's tennis shoes, it's electronics. It's every conceivable gift you could be giving. It's even drugs. There are a lot of pharmaceutical products that are counterfeited. And I will say, even when it comes to just the electronics alone, last year there were 70 deaths and 350,000 serious injuries. just on consumer electronics products, but we see issues everywhere when it comes to inferior products.
So it's not only an inferior product, but it also could be really dangerous. I hadn't thought about that aspect because I'm just thinking about fake purses. And so you're making me go a lot further than that. The toy may be dangerous.
Absolutely. So the toy may be dangerous. They're often, because they're cheaper, they're often made with inferior products, and there's no safety that's being applied to these. There's the people who are importing these products, as I mentioned, they're often crime syndicates. They have no interest in keeping consumers safe. So that is a major issue with these products, is that when you buy them, it's just you're unsuspecting. You have no idea what you're bringing into your lives.
At a macro level, what kind of impact is this having on GDP and things like that? Can we put a dollar sign on it? It's got to be $100 billion, or I'm just randomly guessing. What do you think the impact is?
Jim, that's a very good guess. So worldwide, it's about $1 trillion. And then if you look at it in terms of how it impacts our communities, just in Los Angeles alone, just the city, not even the county, last year it cost us $483 million in lost taxes and 100,000 lost jobs. So this is having a major impact on our society beyond the harm that it can cause to individuals.
Oh, that's a big number. What do I do if I find a company, a website, a store that I suspect? Who is the best person to call? Not 911. Who do I sic?
You can do a couple things. If you already purchased the product, call your credit card company and try to stop the charge. You should contact that website, that store, and verify it. Also, I would contact the local authorities because you never know what information they could already be investigating, and information that you can turn over to them could be helpful in stopping a scam or stopping a criminal.
All right. But I don't call the FBI or anything like that. I feel like that would be a national issue. You know, the local people are concerned about traffic tickets and stuff.
It's a universal issue. Local police are involved, especially if it is a store, somebody, a street vendor selling counterfeit goods on the street. They are violating very likely both federal law and local and state law if they're selling without a permit on the street. There was a recent example of that happening in New York City where there was a big crackdown. So it is something that both local authorities and national law enforcement authorities can get involved in.
All right.
And should be aware of.
What do I tell my kids? How do I raise children that are not going to get hurt by this and aware of it? You know, but Santa, how can Santa be faking stuff?
That's a great question, Jim. And it's all about teaching our kids a strong moral code, right? So it's about being authentic and buying authentic and just letting them know the value of that this is not a victimless crime, and it is a crime. And just as much as we teach them not to do other things that are not permitted by the law, teaching them this as well is so critical.
I haven't seen McGruff on TV recently, have I?
McGruff has been on TV. We have a new public service announcement with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and McGruff is now in 3D animation. If you haven't seen it yet, tune in to this week's Children and Family Emmy Awards, and McGruff is going to be right on there.
Ah, are you presenting an award? Is McGruff a presenter, or?
McGruff is not going to be a presenter this time. He's not been nominated, and there's a subtle hint there for the Academy.
That's a controversy right there. There's something wrong going on there.
McGruff has been very, very active this year. He's had he's even had his first movie appearance in Disney's Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. He's very much out there, and you know what? He's still hungry. Because you got to be hungry to take a bite out of crime.
I love it. All right, Kathy Paul, how do we find out more? Follow online, become part of the solution.
Become part of the Go For Real campaign that we are both sponsoring by visiting ncpc.org/GoForReal.
Fantastic. Kathy, final word?
I just want everyone to be real and buy real. So thank you for sharing the word. Share it with your friends. Share it with your families. You're taking care of them by making sure that they buy real. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Y'all have fantastic holidays, both of you. We are out of time for today, but yes, we are back next week with a bunch of new shows. Be safe. Happy holidays. Bye now.